All right, at this point I'd like to briefly qualify. My name's Trish and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Trish.
And boy, when I start drinking, it's not pretty. And I had to do that for a long time just to deal with life. And thank goodness through you guys, the steps and the fellowship of AA and my higher power, I don't have to do that just for today. And I'm very, very grateful and honored to be here. The group has asked me to remind you to please make sure your friends are off and refrain from moving around or talking while the speaker is sharing. So at this point, I'd like to introduce the speaker. The speaker that I chose tonight is a very good friend of mine, and I've known her for quite some time, and I just love Julie. I love Julie, and one of the reasons why I love Julie is because I want to hear, because I know Julie has been through some rough times. And, you know, I watch her, and I watch her apply these principles, and I watch her stay sober one day at a time. And, you know, I've been very blessed to have been with her through some of these rough times and shared those with her, and she's been there for me. And for me, that's what friendship's all about. So I'm very anxious to hear Julie, and so let's welcome her.
Okay. Hold on to your hat. Somebody, I don't know, somebody was saying something earlier about, what did I give a good talk? And I was like, sometimes I suck and sometimes I'm awesome. And we'll find out which that is here in a few minutes. So, you know, I kept hearing this song in my head as I was sitting here waiting to get up and talk, and there's a singer named Jenny Owens, and she sings this song about, all I want to do is give my life to you, you know, and it's not a love song to a human being, it's a love song to her God. And the last line in the chorus is, and let your will be done until that's all I want to do. And it's real pretty. It's on iTunes, but anyway, now I'm a promoter. So anyway, it just kind of reflects what has happened to me in Alcoholics Anonymous. It's not because I thought it was a good idea. It was because I had to learn how to give my life over to my higher power, because I wanted to stay sober and I wanted to have a meaningful life. In our big book, it talks about, You know, am I going to be stupid, boring, and glum like some righteous people I see for giving up alcohol? Have you a sufficient substitute? Well, let's see. Did anybody get to AA on the way up? Show of hands. Anybody? Everything was clicking right along and you just thought you'd come check it out. So, yeah, me either. And I heard a lady say one time, you know, think about your last week drinking. Everybody, just think about it. And then think about last week, the last 7 days. And I would say that I have a sufficient substitute for that life of drinking. It didn't serve me. Didn't serve me well. At the end, in the beginning, I thought it was everything. I'm nervous. I am from a family of five. I'm the youngest, and my dad was in the Army, and we traveled a lot. And in Huntsville, Alabama, I had my first drink of wine. My dad poured me a little glass. I think it was his retirement party. And it was Ernest and Julio Gallo Rhine wine in a gallon bottle, green, screw top with a little ring handle on the top. There was lots of nodders out there. And my dad, I'm sure, thought it was a good idea. You know, we'll introduce her to alcohol in a safe environment. La, 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 la. And so I had my little glass, you know, my little wine glass. And Daddy took that gallon of wine and put it out in the garage. And it was really cold in the garage. And after I had a few sips, I decided I'd go help myself. And near as I can recollect, I had about a half a gallon of wine. That's 13. And I got a lot of attention. Everybody knew I was there. And I have a saying, love me, hate me, don't ignore me. And you could not ignore me that night. And I got knee-walking, bed-spinning, puking drunk. I remember laying on the bed, and I didn't know enough to put my foot on the floor to keep the bed from spinning. And I had to work that out a little later. But I can remember my dad turned the light on. And what a cruel thing to do, you know. He turned the light, overhead light on. I was like, ugh. Yeah, light off. That's all I could say. And I didn't know it at all, but I knew something really special had happened. And the next morning I woke up and I couldn't wait to do it all over again. I was puking out my nose, but it was worth it. I hated the way I felt once I got sick, but it was still worth it. And there developed inside of me, unbeknownst to me, an itch inside my brain that only alcohol could scratch. It was the only way that I could scratch that itch. And I was 13, not a lot of opportunities for drinking. And immediately I just was really thrown into alcoholism. I took every opportunity from that point forward to drink any time that I could. And I pursued that pretty vigorously. I, within a year, had been thrown out of school. Well, I was suspended, and I failed ninth grade. And that, you know, like, bing, bang, boom. You know, I mean, I was just like, I wasn't in jail because I was too little. But some 13-year-old ex-cons are sitting in here, I'm sure, today going, I got busted. I was in there. But my parents, God bless them, were a little overprotective. But anyway, be that as it may, where am I going? Alcoholism. I mean, I just drunk all the time. Failed ninth grade. And the longest period of sobriety I had from the age of 13 until the age of 27 years and 11 months was the summer between ninth and ninth grade. Because that was the summer we moved to Melbourne, Florida. And I hadn't gone to school yet. And the cool kids were apparently not in my neighborhood. I met some normal kids, and I hung out with them, and I kind of tried to act like them until I found the cool kids. And then it was off to the races. So fast forward, drunk, not paying attention to school, have no direction in my life. I'd hang out with whoever would have me. I got in lots of trouble. Minor trouble, but lots of trouble. God, my parents. You know, I think about my stepdaughters now and how much, you know, when they just go a little bit off the beam, how much it hurts, you know. And I just can't imagine, you know, my child being out all night, stepchild, but still, I just would freak right the hell out. And just thinking about what my parents went through raising me. Well, my brother and sister weren't choir members either. But they moved out. I stayed. I never left. I can remember my mom saying, well, you know, you're 15. You should know better. You know, you're 19. You should know better. You're 25. Get the hell out of my house. Don't you love me? Don't you people love me? You know? How can you say that? Oh, my God. So, so when I was 25, I moved out of the house. And mainly just because I found a guy that would let me stay at his house. And I did that. Anyway, I got in trouble with the law a little bit. Nothing crazy. Never got a DUI. Knew all the cops in my town, West Melbourne. But what happened was my behavior was dropping lower than my standards. You know, I kept trying to lower my standards, and that my behavior would not keep up. I just kept going, waking up and going, really? Oh, man. Never really had any employment. Tried to go back to school a little bit in college, but I just didn't have what it took to show up, you know. And I kind of had a nervous breakdown, and started getting some counseling, and I started getting directed to get some, maybe go to just a couple AA meetings. And I knew a guy that, he was actually my dealer, who had some sobriety time. I had heard about him. He was really bad. He did other things, you know. I was so judgmental. He was doing other things besides just drinking and what I was doing. But I knew that he had 3 months, and I called him up, and I asked him if he would take me to an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. And he said that if I really wanted to get sober, that I could find it myself. He gave me directions. He said, I'll be late, but I'll try to meet you there. And so I got to the meeting, and he wasn't there. But there were a lot of interesting people. It was a young people's meeting, which on the banks of the Indian River in Brevard County looks a little different than a young people's meeting in Orlando, Florida, right by a college campus, I would imagine. Because Melbourne's not that prosperous. It was a pretty scary sight, which really comforted me because I felt immediately superior to everybody there. I was like, woo! I can't be an alcoholic. Look at this lot of people. Yeah. And lots of cute guys. Still single at this point. Amazing. I mean, I couldn't believe anybody hadn't snatched me up by that time. But So sometimes I hear people say, oh, if that kind of crap was going on at my first meeting, I would never come back, you know. If somebody was talking about this thing or that thing or the other thing. So I get to my first Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, and I'm looking at all the cute people and the crazy people and the scary people and the bikers and all that, and I'm just like going, I was just a nice beach girl who overshot the mark 4 nights out of 7. You know, I wasn't that bad. And so, does anybody have a topic? It was an open discussion, which scares me now. I don't really go to many of those. And this girl said, well, yeah, I'd like to share about something. You know, I swear to God, I could take you to her house, this girl. She really exists. Most people don't believe this story, but she said she made a lot of money doing what she did, and she wanted to stay sober, but she didn't know if she could turn tricks and stay sober at the same time. Now, this is my first share I ever heard in Alcoholics Anonymous, ever. And I immediately felt great because I knew I was better than her. You know, in my mind, I was like, I am so much better than that. So the next person that shared had about 5 years sober, and she was living in her car. And somebody else was talking about how they'd had a cocaine-induced heart attack on the dance floor, Studio 54. So bing, bang, boom. I'm better than everybody else there because I couldn't relate to these people. And when I started doing my inventory, many, many, many months later, year and a half later, I realized that I said that I was better than this woman. She was just more honest than I was. I wasn't walking down the trail or US 1, but if you would pay the rent and feed me, I was your prostitute. I didn't necessarily do a cash exchange on the barrelhead. I didn't say, well, you know, you get this. It was just kind of understood. And I know nobody out there can relate to that. There's nobody, no lady in this room or guy or whatever. Nobody gets that. Never did that. And the girl that lived in her car, She just didn't have a key to her parents' house like I did. The only reason I didn't live in my parents' car that they gave me is because they felt too bad to throw me out on the street, which I deserved. I won't get into the other guy. So, well, I start dating the guy from Studio 54. He looked like he should be in the military. He was a very kind of officer and a gentlemanly looking guy. And I always say, if you don't know what 13 step is, it's when somebody that has a little bit of sobriety time takes sexual advantage of newcomers. That's really what it means to me. Somebody else might have another definition, and when you speak, you can talk about it. I always say, is it really 13 steppin' if you start dating them before they get sober? Apparently not, because he felt really good about what he was doing. So we started to date. And I didn't go back to Alcoholics Anonymous because I knew I was better than those people. And the guy from Studio 54 told me that I wasn't an alcoholic because I would just drink two beers. When he was around, I would drink two beers. I would supplement heavily, you know. But in my mind, I was saying, two beers, I'm not an alcoholic. And within 3 weeks, he told me, you know, he was done 13-stepping me and broke my little heart. And I realized that I really needed Alcoholics Anonymous for reasons other than what I thought, you know. I needed to get sober, and I proved it to myself that night because, I got drunk. But it was uncontrollable. It's completely uncontrollable drinking. And I woke up the next day and started going to Alcoholics Anonymous meetings at this club, the Triangle Club. And I really didn't do a whole lot of anything except for get in the fellowship. Emphasis on fellow. I didn't drink, and I dated a lot, and I got 13 steps. I'm sober September 25th, 1990. My birthday's October 22nd. I turned 28 years old, and this 51-year-old biker, who I'm sure had the best intentions, gave me a gold necklace with a dolphin on it. I'm sure there was no ulterior motive behind that, because I said, I can't take this. And he says, oh, do you think everybody that's nice to you is trying to take advantage of you? And I was like, well, it's a pretty chain. No, you must be my friend. I would like this necklace. And so compromising myself, I didn't even know what I was doing. And so that's kind of the theme of my first year and a half sober, is I went to a lot of meetings. I told other people what they weren't doing right. I read the literature so I knew how to talk about it, but I didn't do anything. Well, that's not true. I didn't not do anything. I started praying, and I got a card of the third step prayer from my sponsor, Brent. And third step prayer, God, I offer myself to thee, to build with me and to do with me as you will. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. Without the these and thous and wilts and whatever. So I like that. You know, I like that prayer. And I said, take away my difficulties. I heard that. Take away my difficulties. I didn't hear all the other stuff about helping others and whatever. But I memorized it, and it impressed people at the meeting, you know. What happened was that I didn't drink alcohol for 18 months, and then my behavior sober was as bad as my behavior drunk, and I couldn't explain it away. I couldn't explain away what I had done. Dave knows the whole story because I told it at a group he was at. If you want to know the whole story, I'll tell you later. It really, I couldn't explain myself away anymore. And it was me and me. And it was ugly. I really, really hated myself. And I finally thought, maybe I should do these steps instead of just think about them and talk about them and read about them and listen to you talk about them, maybe I should actually do them. And so I started to do the steps in order. The first three steps, I believe, I worked before I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, at least the first two, because my life was unmanageable. I got here. I might not have been willing to do anything. I was definitely powerless over alcohol. But I had that in my head. I didn't have it in action, but I definitely had it in my head and my heart. I did come to know some kind of vague higher power, some nebulous stardust in the galaxy or something like that. I didn't have any idea what it was. I didn't want it to be religious. And so I was like, well, okay, God of AA or whatever, group of drunks, just whatever, as long as it wasn't me. I did the third step prayer, and then I sat down and started working the steps with a sponsor. I started doing the fourth step, and four through nine with a sponsor. Her name was, we called her Betty Boop. I don't remember what her real last name is, Betty Boop over in Melbourne. And it was a very light fourth step. I did it to the best of my ability at that time. But I started to be instructed that it wasn't up to me to take everybody else's inventory. It was up to me to take my own inventory. Very difficult for me as a judgmental, vindictive, you know, I wouldn't be an ass if you weren't an ass kind of person, and you deserved it and things like that. And so I started to take a little bit of a glance through that. It was light, I'm telling you. You know, amends, I was pretty light on those. 6 and 7, I quit doing the thing that I hated myself so much for at 18 months. I can say that, but it was pretty light. So as I started going through the steps, I started learning more from my sponsor about sponsorship. And I changed sponsors around a little bit, and I started learning more about sponsorship. Sounded like a good idea. I wasn't going to do it, but it sounded like a good idea. And then, as life has a way of doing, I was, you get sober, you don't know anything, I didn't get any education. So I had this job as a optical, I can't even say it, and I was one, ophthalmic surgical assistant. And I really found that I liked working with people. I was building bombs when I was drunk. That's a whole other story I could tell you about when I was building bombs. But during the most recent conflict, they're talking about Tomahawk cruise missiles and B-2 bombers, and GPS. I helped build the first GPS satellite, so it's really a long time ago. And but anyway, so I really liked working with people and decided to go into massage therapy. I got the right boyfriend now. You know, he looks right, and he's let me live with him and whatever. And sorry, I didn't get I was willing to get better, but I wasn't sure that was a defect yet. So life's happening. I'm getting into the thick of things with life, and love my mother to pieces. And my mom just started to deteriorate in a weird and rapid pace. You know, we didn't really know what was going on with her. She had this really crazy, rare neurological condition, and when we finally got a definitive diagnosis, they were like, you know, you have 6 to 18 months to live. And so, like, reality is hitting me in sobriety. And fortunately, my parents had seen me sober, and I could go back in their home, and I did. I basically moved back into the house. My brother and my sister and my dad and I took care of Mom until she died 6 months later. And I had a male sponsor at the time, which not everybody encourages, but whatever. Like, again, when it's your time to talk, you can tell about it. And I called him one day, and I was just crying. And he said, you know, you're going to get drunk. And I said, what are you talking about? You know, this is painful. He's like, you're going to get drunk if you don't help somebody else. You have to get outside yourself. And I'm like, my pain, my mom, oh my God, how can you be so cruel? He's like, okay, get drunk then. You know, I don't care. And I was three and a half years sober. And he said, why don't you pray and ask God to bring you a sponsee? And so I got down on my knees that night and I prayed and I asked for God to give me a sponsee. And within 24 hours, I had two. Never had one. And I got two. And I think Harry, my sponsor, put one of them up to it, but the other one was totally a gift from God, you know, as she came out of the woodwork. So I started working with people and passing on what I had learned in Alcoholics Anonymous. And the more I tried to carry the message, the more I realized that I was trying to carry my message instead of the message of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I started to become more entrenched in the big book. And I liked that because it was consistent. As you can tell, I'm a little erratic. You know, I'm a little all over the place. And the big book is not. The big book is well, it's a way of living that really works in tough going. It really works. So, kind of fast forward a little bit, I ended up, God had a way of directing me, well, I don't even want to finish that sentence, so I'm not going to. I ended up in Orlando, and I came to the Central Group, and I started coming to Central, and I could not believe what I heard here. This group, the sharing in this group specifically, just blew me away. The actual application of the steps from almost every single member in good standing at this group, it just floored me. I loved it. And I ended up, you know, moving over here in 1998. And I'm so grateful for those of you who came before me and helped. You okay, Chet? And helped make this group what it is. You know, I see Angel sitting out there with all his time, and Chet, and the other people that have been real cornerstones of bringing the book into this room and helping everybody else to apply it to their lives. If you're getting sober here in the Central Group, you're really lucky, you know. Or you cannot drink if you go to a meeting and your first share is from a hooker. I mean, you know, you can get sober anywhere if you're ready. You know what I mean? And if tonight's your first night, I'm sorry, but if you really want to get sober, you can even get sober when I'm sharing. The desire comes from within me, you know, or within us. It talks about in the book about how to work with people. It's like, be friendly, ask them to read the book, but if your man is to find God, the desire must come from within. I can't make anybody want it. I can't make anybody do it. All I can do is show what was given to me. I guess I've lived here quite some time, maybe 5 or 6 years, and there's a guy that used to come to meetings here that a lot of us know, and I love still to this day, Johnny F. And He one day brought this brought this really good looking man to the meeting, and I asked Jack G. I was like, "What's the deal with the old Baldy over there?" And he's like, "Well, you know, he's." Separated. It's not divorced yet, but he's separated. I'm pretty sure this one's going through. They've been separated a long time. So I was like, all dibs, you know, that one's mine. And and he's still bald and his head's turning red. So, you know, I was, well, I want to talk a little bit about four step. You know, a lot of times people are, I'm telling you, if you can keep up. lot of times, you know, we get in meetings and everybody's talking about fear and how we're afraid of this happening and that happening and everything. And, you know, I remember that my first four-step, write down my fears and, like, I'm afraid I'm going to be disfigured. That, you know, like, my looks won't be my calling card. Because really, quite honestly, back then, many years ago, that was, like, all I had on the ball. And if I was your flavor or whatever. And then I was afraid that, you know, something would happen to my mom. You know, that my mom would die. I was afraid I would never have children because I didn't deserve them. And I wasn't worthy. And that no man would want to have children with me because I was such a nut job. And I would never get married. You know, none of that stuff would happen. And I never did have kids. I do have stepchildren, and I think God knew what he was doing when I didn't ever have any of my own. I swear, the women that get sober with small kids, God bless you. Oh, my God. Like, I haven't had a drink in 20 years, and I can't even imagine trying to raise a small child now, you know, with all the tools in my tool belt. And you guys, just God bless the mothers in this room and the dads. You know, I know there's dads here that are trying to do the right thing, too, so it's a wonderful thing to see. But anyway, back to my fears. Everything on that list that I was afraid of, like, I know I look good for my age, but I got old, you know? I'm 20 years older now. My body's changing. My knee hurts. What is that all about? You know? Yeah, gravity. that was my spirituality leaking out. But what happened is that all those things happened. My mom died. I never had kids for a super long time. I never got married. And what I learned is that part in the third step, only through living through it, please take away my difficulties so that my victories over them will bear witness to those I would serve. And so I get to work with women who are afraid of this or that or the other thing. And I get to say, it's scary. God will get you through it. Because I'm a wild card. I got through it, and I didn't have a drink. And I learned how to help somebody else. Now, I can't help everybody, God knows. But there are some women that I'm uniquely aligned with that I can help them with things like that. And so Ray and I got married, and it was a great time. Leading up to the marriage, you know, it was very fun. Everybody was all excited for us. Jim was our videographer, and I'm still mad at him. And we really had a great wedding. The problem started when he didn't do everything perfectly, according to me. And I think maybe, I'm just guessing, maybe you felt the same way. It was rocky. It was rocky. It was rough, you know, and it got really, really tough. And just in a nutshell, we were married for like 4.5 years, ended up getting divorced. It's great fun getting married in Alcoholics Anonymous. It sucks getting divorced in Alcoholics Anonymous. It sucks getting divorced. But getting divorced in Alcoholics Anonymous was really uncomfortable. And And I'm one to wear my heart on my sleeve anyway, so I was in here crying, and Dion would be doing my nails, I'd be crying. I mean, everyone would cry, get a massage, cry. I was just crying everywhere, go to my doctor, cry. But everybody in my life, even my doctors in the program, so it was kind of cool because nobody said, you know, shut your belly. And they might have said it under their breath, but nobody said it to my face that I recall. I mean, everybody I think during that time is still alive, so I think that they didn't say it to my face. And what happened in all of that and all these other situations in my life is that I continued to try to do my best to be a good member of Alcoholics Anonymous. Came to a lot of meetings. Saved my ass. You know, I can't help anybody if I'm not sober. And I have seen over and over and over and over again in this program, everybody's eligible to pick up a cocktail one day. Everybody. I've seen, you know, from high to low, long time, short time, it doesn't matter. I don't want to be the one to pick up a drink, so I throw myself bodily into the meetings. I throw myself bodily at a sponsor. I throw myself bodily at sponsees. I'm like, you need a sponsor, I'm gonna help your ass. You know what I mean? You look, you're screwed up. You're just screwed up enough to do what I say. So let's go. And I got really involved in service, or continued to stay involved in service, and was opening a new business at this time as well, which I thought was it really is a good idea. I just don't know if it's a good idea if I do it, but. We did all that, you know, and I, inventory after inventory, looking at myself. I didn't have any shortage of bad things to say about the other party, but I definitely was trying to do the deal for myself. And a miracle happened, and it really is a miracle, that while I was looking at myself and working my steps, that my ex-husband at that time was doing the same thing. And we came to this conclusion that maybe we shouldn't have gotten divorced. And I'm wearing my ring today because you should have a marriage like the marriage I have today. I don't know where I went wrong in building the first one, but that son of a bitch had to be destroyed. You know what I'm saying? I mean, that thing had to be flattened. God took the structure of my marriage. I took the structure. God didn't do it. Took the structure of my marriage and just flattened it. And I mean, the backhoes had come and cleared everything away. And the only thing that was left was a foundation of a love for a higher power in Alcoholics Anonymous. And we reconciled and remarried. We're just celebrating the original anniversary. Because we can. And I tell you what. It's really great to be married to my best friend, and yeah, I know it is. It's sweet. It's cool, and it happened to me. You know, it's awesome. So, I'm not one of those people that holds a lot back, and there's a lot going on in my life right now. You know, sobriety gave me a career. In massage therapy, I've been a licensed massage therapist for 17 years, and it's really helped me be proud of who I am and helping people, and I'm good at it. You know, I'm not the best for everybody, but I'm the best that I can be. And through some situations that have come about in the last couple years, I'm kind of unemployed voluntarily. Stepped away from my business, and like I said, I'm kind of unemployed. And how that came about was, there's a lot of stuff that led up to it, but my sister, as many of you know, is terminally ill with pancreatic cancer, and she's really, like, just dropping off. And I just kept saying, you know, I can't focus on this business and be with my sister. And my husband and I were talking, and he said, you know, if there's anything that I can give you, I want to be able to give it to you. And I can't give you much, but I can give you that time with your sister. Let's stop this doing this other stuff here that's keeping you distracted from what you really want to do, which is to be with your sister. And so because I have that in my life, I have the ability. I keep saying I'm leaving and I never leave, but I'm leaving Thursday. We're going to drive up there with Molly, my oldest stepdaughter, and this is our first road trip, so I'm thinking iPod with the thingies might be a good idea. it's about an 11-hour drive, and I get to go up there and be with my family, and you know, it's like, does Alcoholics Anonymous offer me a sufficient substitute for taking everything from everybody in my life? I was the black hole of humanity. I wanted whatever was yours. I didn't want to work for anything for myself. I just would deserve whatever you had. Bless you, Nancy. And I get to, it's taken 20 years to get to this kind of point, but I get to go and be with her. And I'm really grateful for that. I one of the biggest resentments I ever had, I'm almost done, so don't cut me off. she's taller than me, she might knock me over. I always resented my dad. My dad was always on my resentment list because he was an Army officer and he didn't understand me and he was mean, and I was out all night at 13 years old. I can't understand what would piss him off, you know. But anyway, I just always resented him. And probably my second forced fifth step with my sponsor, I tell the story all the time, so I'm sorry if it bores you, but there's a new person that may not have heard it. I was crying and telling my sponsor how my dad had whipped me really bad when I was 8 years old, and I was going in this great embellishment, you know, of my dad and his, how I was wounded and all this stuff, which, really, it wasn't a deserved spanking, but, you know, I'm sure it made up for something else I didn't get caught at. You know what I mean? But so I'm crying, I'm sobbing, and her name was Mona Lisa. My hand to God. Her name's Mona Lisa. And she let me get done, and she said, you know, I'm sure that was very painful for you. You know, I was, oh yes, the innocence of my childhood was taken from me. And she says, how old were you when that happened? I said, I was 8 years old. Like, that bastard beating an 8 year old kid. I can't imagine doing that to a kid. I can now, but I couldn't then. She said the words that forever changed my life. She said, how old are you now? And I gave her the old, huh? This isn't going the way I was expecting. I like a little more patting on the back, please, before you give me some reality. And what that experience taught me, and what I continue to have the opportunity to learn every day as I go forward, is that this is the day I need to live in. I got to work through a lot of that stuff. Let me tell you, I've been to some counseling. I got to work through some of that stuff, and some of that stuff shouldn't happen, whatever. But what is today? Today, I'm 48 years old, and I mostly act. Okay, maybe not 48, but I act like a reasonable adult. And what's happened by doing that and learning that is that I have a relationship with my dad today where we fought like cats and dogs. We couldn't even have a conversation on the phone, to the point that today my dad even... And before he got dementia, he told me he was proud. But in his dementia, he still remembers that he's proud. And I get to be a daughter to my father. And you may not think that's a good idea right now, you know? But I tell you what, you'll get to grow up in Alcoholics Anonymous. These steps will help you work through all that stuff. Don't be afeared. Don't be afeared of these steps. It's not, you know, hanging judge on a bad day. This is God's grace and blessing in my life. This has changed my life and helped to make me the person I am today. Take it or leave it. Thank you.